so Dad, Mom rescued another dog today.
Yeah, I saw her on her pictures on Facebook. That was really nice of her.
Yeah, I'll tell you what she couldn't save, though.
What?
Was Hobart from this terrible haircut. Check out his head. It looks like he got a mohawk and an afro at the same time.
Well, yeah, it doesn't look too good.
Look, it's a thylacine perm.
Obviously a dog groomer in fear of his life. Hobart tends to attack every dog groomer who's come by and tried to shampoo him.
Hey, Hobart, listen. Even Weird Al wrote a song for your hair. He even knows about it. Listen.
I'm so angry at my idiotic barber. Think I'll stay in here till it grows out a little. Lousy haircut, a really stupid haircut. What a silly haircut. I can't believe this haircut.
It looks so terrible. I want to take his picture and put it in the yearbook and show it to his prom date.
I didn't know thylacines could cry.
Oh, happy 50th episode.
Yeah, it's 50th episode. I can't believe it. We're having a little party here at Castle Dienstein. You can hear everybody in the background. Mm-hmm. That's Super Rica going around with a tray of canapes he made himself.
Would you like one? It is a Dr. Molly. It is very good. Try a Dr. Molly. They are very nice. They are very, very good. Yes, try it with the salsa and may he myself.
Super Rica, why do these have four posters and a piece of fabric over each one? They're called canapes, honey, not canapes.
Oh, I got it wrong. I'm sorry. I see the canopy bed in the other room, so I just made it like that.
Well, it's kind of a good idea. Are the guests enjoying them?
No, some are sending out for pizza.
Well, that's okay.
I tried my best.
And we appreciate it.
Yeah, it's really quite a party. We've got quite a slew of folks in here. And Rashi, I don't see Hobart anywhere.
He's not coming in.
Oh, is that because of the bad haircut?
Oh, man, it looks so terrible.
Yeah, it really looked kind of awful. But
I took a bunch of pictures with Mom's cell phone. It's so funny.
Make sure he doesn't see them, you know, because he's pretty good on the computer.
I'm going to post them on Facebook. He said the only place I can post them is MySpace because no one's on there anymore.
Yeah, that's true. Or LiveJournal. You can on my LiveJournal account. Nobody reads that anymore.
Here's to you, Hobart.
I think he's...
He's got a frohawk.
If we're not careful, it'll attack the cat next door and use its hide for a toupee or something.
I can't even breathe. It looks so dumb.
Well, look, you know, I think we'll get back to the party in a few minutes. Let's go over here and we
can sneak away and start the podcast.
Yeah, let's go into my office. We'll start the podcast from in there.
Okay.
Okay, nobody's over in here. Wait a minute. Hobart, get out from under my desk. Take the paper bag off your head.
Hey, put my hair straightener down.
Boy, that poor creature.
I know, man.
All right, he's out.
Hey, I feel your pain, son.
Yeah. I've had plenty of bad haircuts, too. I know what that's like.
Indeed.
Yeah. I've had some real lulus. Let's see.
So, you want to tell them what you're doing tomorrow? That's exciting.
Oh, we have the Dog Whisperer coming
over.
Oh,
nice.
Caesar Milan
is coming over. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Bright and early.
To wake us up and put us through our paces with our pups. Mm-hmm. That's fun. Mm-hmm. It's fun. And you rescued a pup today, as a matter of fact.
I did.
It's Dog Central.
Yeah, I know. I went and picked up little Humphrey Bogart. We're calling him Bogey.
Aww.
And because he has that old Hollywood swagger and that gentlemanly charm. And he's also ruggedly handsome. And by ruggedly handsome, I mean half his face was mauled by a pit bull.
Ooh.
So that ain't good.
In lieu of calling him Two-Face, We decided to call him Bogey.
Probably more tasteful.
Yes. Well, no, I mean, it depends on who you are, you know. Somebody might look at him and go, Two-Face, yeah. But and it's not too bad. He's still a very handsome fellow, I have to say. It's just a rugged thing. And once he has his surgery, he's going to have a little of, like, reconstructive surgery. And Boston Buddies is paying for everything. Because every dog that goes into their care, when Boston Buddies decides to take care of a little Boston Terrier, they get the full, you know, the whole nine
yards.
That's amazing. From start to finish. I actually called Rachel from the vet, because I drove from Bakersfield, which is about 2 hours and 20 minutes away, to Anaheim, which is about three hours away from Bakersfield, and then the hour home. And ironically, our house is right in the middle of both of those places, but it was either that or he died at 5.
Yeah.
So I just got in the car and went.
Wow.
You know, they posted
Good
an urgent
you.
Need on their Facebook, and I said, hey, I'm not booked today. I can go.
You were his angel of mercy.
They called me, boom, like within 30 seconds of the time I hit send, and Rachel said, Rachel's the one who runs it. She said, please go get him. We know you. We trust you. The other guy who's available, we just don't know. Mm-hmm. So please go get him. And I said, I got my keys. I'm out. And I went into Paul's office, and I said, bye. And he goes, where are you going? I said, off to Bakersfield to get a pup. He goes, another one? Because I just got one 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And I had actually seen him online earlier in the morning, and I'd wondered if you had seen that. I didn't see your reply from
I didn't you. Reply there. I just sent her an email.
You just moved.
I did.
Yep.
Well, I moved in, and I got to spend the day with Bogey.
Yeah.
Yeah. He had his own little squeaky Maltese Falcon.
Really?
No. But
awesome.
He should.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We should make those.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Yeah, well, he was so cute.
That's cool.
Thanks.
I spent the day over in Spiderland.
Yeah, that's also a good place to be.
Yeah. Watched one of the rough cuts. Not a rough cut. What do we call it? The animatic of an episode.
How's it looking?
Looking good.
Of course it is.
Looking good.
Well, you got a dream team over there.
Yeah, I can't really talk about it just yet, but maybe a little bit more in a month or two. But for right now, I can say it's looking good and looking fine. And
yeah,
I'm back in the swing of things. I took the week off last week. I went to London to do promo on the Arkham Asylum game.
How'd that go?
Arkham City. Went great. It was a blur, actually, because the actual work part was I would go over every day at 10 o'clock to Rocksteady Studios, which is over at Highgate Studio in Kentish Town, which is a part of London. Mm-hmm. And and it's a really nice, very very creative atmosphere where there's a lot of I don't know how much actual filming goes on in the other studio parts, but I think it is a, you know, creative area where a lot of artists and filmmakers.
They do all the mocap there, don't they?
Yes, and
So there is a lot of filming.
There is actually, I did a couple of interviews on the mocap set, and that's where they take people and they put them in the mocap outfits. And well, you would know better than I. You've actually done it for a few things.
I loved it.
Yeah. So you did interviews on the mocap set, so you're going to have an interview where you're mocapped.
Yes, and it's Batman talking, and it's
awesome.
My voice, and it's like, well, I don't really, you know, fight crime.
Oh, come on.
No, it's.
Have you ever worn a mocap suit though? They're pretty excellent.
No, man, that looked like. It looked like a moving tar pit in one of those.
Seemed like you were covered with wacky glue and fell in a ball pit at Chuck E. Cheese.
Yeah. I look like the Phantom Blot in need of a diet. You know.
Stop it with the self depreciation.
No, I'm kidding.
They're super comfortable.
Yeah, so I hear.
They feel, you know, like how you put a knee brace on your knee, like that stretchy
spandex.
Like, they are so comfortable. That's what they feel like. But it's like a big hug all over your body.
You know, they were actually
like a stupid hat.
Nice.
They were actually making somebody up for mocap there. They were putting the dots on their face for something. And I'm not exactly sure what it was for. It might have been a demonstration for publicity or something.
Uh-huh.
But I did it just there in front of a big standee of Batman.
Mm-hmm.
And I did them at other places. But boy, I did one right after another for 3 days solid. And, you know, talking.
Did they all ask you the same? Do you find that when you're on a press junket like that, that they all ask you the same frickin' question over and over again?
Yes and no. They always start off as asking kind of more or less the same question. And the one question I hear over and over is, how is writing a video game different from writing a movie or a comic book?
How is that?
It's different. You know, there are similarities, but there's also differences. In that,
hang that on. Was absolutely not an answer at all.
Well, it's my preamble to answering the question.
Okay.
Because, you know, there, to some degree, it takes into account all of those things and none of those things. You know, for Arkham City, I need a knowledge of Batman and his world and
mm-hmm.
Gotham City. And
which
also,
you also need to write the comic.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And also a knowledge of how things work in a game and how gameplay works. And I always say that one of the mistakes I made early on, and it was a mistake that I made just a handful of times when I wrote Arkham Asylum is that, you know, getting into it, writing what they call the cinematics, which are the breaks between the levels, are sometimes I would write things that were a bit more indicative of a movie or a TV show, and the game designers liked it and the animators liked it, but they just said, you know, we got to keep this moving toward toward the gameplay levels. You can't be revealed. It's a slippery slope. You can't reveal too much information in the cinematics because that cuts into the gameplay experience. So right.
You want the player to feel like they're discovering it.
Exactly.
Not being told it.
Yeah, when it gets to the point of where... that's it exactly. Thanks, Ezra. When you get to the point where it's like, I'm writing too much and I'm telling too much of a story, then the game becomes a passive experience and the game player wants to be Batman. Or mm-hmm. or in this case, wants to be Catwoman, because in Arkham City you can play as Catwoman.
Nice. Oh, wow.
Yeah. And there are all these great skins that you can put on as the character, so you can actually change the look of Batman. You can look like the animated Batman.
Yeah, I hear the animated one is available. That's great.
Yeah,
that's
awesome. There are different Batman skin designs, and there are a couple of surprises. I mean, I have to be very careful with what I can say, because mm-hmm. I looked at a few things that are just so awesome that I... but were for my eyes only, when I was looking at them. But and even though a lot of the game was up for demonstration and we showed a lot to the press, I just have to keep in mind
How about we just not talk about it anymore until it comes out in October?
Okay.
Good job on your interviews. Yeah.
The interviews were great. It was fun doing that. The comic book's coming. October 18th is the day that everything breaks really big for me, because as far as being associated with things, because Arkham City comes out, the big game, and with the rush of publicity, there, man, that's almost like a movie release. They're mm-hmm. with all the promotion they're going to do.
It makes more money than most movies.
Easily. There's that, and the Arkham City graphic novel hardcover that ties into the game, mm-hmm. that sets the stage for the game, comes out, and
that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, and that's just, again, with that, people have just seen the tip of the iceberg. Most of them have just seen the 5 issues. There are also, I believe, 6 or 7 online chapters that also tie into the game that have only been available for purchase, for download online. So I think a big chunk of the comic reading audience is going to see those for the first time. And those also sort of... those enhance the stories, because these are sideline stories about some of the other characters who are involved in Arkham City, and some of the sideline characters have not been fully revealed in the game yet.
Oh, wow.
Or it gives clues to certain things in the game. We had to be very careful that we weren't putting things in the comic that tipped a lot of the game surprises, but there are a few in there. If you go back and if you play the game and then you go mm-hmm. back and read the graphic novel, you'll go like, oh, that's what they were getting at, or oh, I see where they were going with that.
It was interesting seeing the Robin at the end of that series for the first time, and then just recently some leaks of his images from the game, I believe.
Yeah, I love the design of Robin. He looks kind of like a rugby thug.
Oh yeah,
He's got a shaved head and everything, and he's real tough looking. One of the great things about the game was I was reminiscing with Paul Crocker, who's head of story for Rocksteady, about some of the elements that we had come up with when we first started brainstorming about the game. And I said, boy, that first week when we were all together and we were working on the game, we came up with so many weird out of our head ideas for the game. And then I went on about one idea that I particularly liked, and I said, I loved the idea, and I can't say what it is. I loved it when we were talking about putting this in the game and how intricate that was going to be. And then Paul said, that's in the game. Oh. I said, what?
Wow.
He said, yeah, we put that all in there. And I said, I never heard about it again. He goes, well, surprise. So there, it even takes
wonderful.
Me by surprise, because there were some things from my first draft of the script or first story meetings that I thought, those it all fell by the wayside. It's all in there.
Nice.
And that's
I know what it is.
You know what it is, because you saw me writing it two years
ago. I did, and it's so awesome.
So,
quick question back to your writing. How much of the incidental lines and stuff do you actually have to write? Because obviously you write the main story and the cinematics, but like a character gets to wander around the video game and talk to or run into other characters once in a while?
Well, we split that up. You know, sometimes I'll write it, and sometimes Paz will take a shot at it. You know, he's got his own team of writers and designers there, and they will do it, and then they'll send it to me, and they'll say, "What do you think about this?" You know, and even just, you know, like this goes on down all the time, and even last week they were locking down a few things, and I looked over a few things, and it all read fine to me. So sometimes, like, he'll take a first shot at some of those things because there's so much dialogue, you know, involved in the characters. It'll be like, you know, Batman walks down, you know, like in Arkham Asylum, he walks down a corridor, he talks to a guard, and there are several different ways it can go. You know, Batman, you know, his attitude is like, "Are you hurt? Did the Joker come this way?" Mm-hmm. You know, he can show a little more concern for the character if you do one thing. If he comes down another way, it's like, "Where'd the Joker go?" You know, like he doesn't have any time for the guy. And then the guard's responses are all different. So between us, we wind up writing volumes and volumes. If you saw the script for Arkham City, it would be
like phone books.
It would be like, like the Encyclopedia Britannica or something.
Well, no, in Arkham Asylum, you did a lot of work on the Riddler's extra stuff, didn't you?
Because
I know, like, all those answering machine messages and stuff, that was all you, wasn't it?
Yes.
Mostly?
And
I remember you doing a heck of a lot of work on those, and there was a lot of information in those.
And there are similar things in Arkham City. There's one character in particular, I can't say who it is, but I had a tremendous amount of fun writing their dialogue. Because you have to, there are several meetings with that character. I'm not going to say anything more about it. But writing their dialogue was an awful lot of fun, because every time you went back, there was something different to say.
Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to seeing all the new and different villains you've added to this one that weren't in the first one.
Yeah, there's like 40
hours of
gameplay
in this one.
Oh, yeah, I'm crossing my fingers, and of course you don't have to say anything. I want a Scarface in there because I love Scarface so much, and there's certain other characters I just would love to see, so that'll be a lot of fun.
Well, you'll see soon. We'll all see it, I'm sure, you know, when I get through it. I mean, I played through a lot of the game, you know.
Yeah.
And I suck at
games. Oh, would you stop?
No, it was just like,
you're super self-depreciative today.
No, well I just
games making are hard. Me tired.
Well, here's what I do. I like games a lot. But I actually had to, and this was something that here was a question I had over and over. It's like, are you a big gamer yourself? Do you enjoy playing games?
And that's a good question.
The game I played was Epic Mickey. And
I didn't even know you ever opened that. I got it for him for Christmas. It was the only thing he wanted for Christmas was Epic Mickey, which also means he wanted a Wii.
To play that. Yeah.
Because did not own one.
Yeah.
So
here's the hell of it. I played Epic Mickey at someone else's house. It's still in the box.
Oh.
I was planning on breaking it out when Calla came to visit, and then when Peter came to visit, nephew.
I think we got them Epic Mickey for Christmas.
And you have the one with the paintbrush Wiimote, too.
Yeah.
Wow.
I gotta play that. I have to play that this week before it becomes obsolete. It's already on its way out.
You better hurry up, dude.
But I love, you know, I played, I was over at somebody else's house and I was playing
Epic
Mickey.
Whose house were you playing Epic Mickey?
Whose house was I at when I was playing Epic Mickey?
Goes over to Alan Burnett's house and drinks beers and plays video games.
Or I watched it at Rocksteady or something like that. Somebody had a
why would they be playing Epic Mickey at Rocksteady?
I don't know. Why were they playing Halo when I was, you know, 2 years ago? They were all playing, I mean, it's like, they have the games around, you know. They have to
be familiar with the competition.
Yeah.
Phew. Epic Mickey is really going to knock out Arkham City.
Well,
research.
Well, yeah. They're trying to model the Oswald character and make him fit as Joker.
Speaking of Joker, did you see what's in my office? You didn't, did you?
I didn't, but I knew it was coming.
How'd you know it was coming?
Because I ordered it.
You ordered it?
I ordered it.
A surprise Joker thing?
What?
That was your prize that I thought came yesterday.
That was my prize. Oh, to go with the Harley Quinn. Thank you very much. Thank you.
You wanted it, didn't you?
Yeah, I didn't have one.
Happy birthday.
Thank you.
Yeah, well, what is this mystery thing?
It's a quarter life-size statue of the Joker.
Oh, my.
And there's a quarter life-size statue of Harley with her two hyenas.
Wow.
So I got...
Whose names are?
Bud and Lou.
Thank you.
Named after Oliver Hardy and Stan Laurel.
I didn't even know that. That's awesome.
Their names are Bud and Lou?
Bud and Lou, yeah.
Named wait, that's not Oliver Hardy and Stan Laurel?
Yeah, that would be I'm kidding. It's named after Abbott and Costello.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm being a moron.
I brain farted for a second there, too, going, wait a minute.
No, that was from Mark Evanier. If he's listening to the podcast, like, what? Well, he's out of his mind. He's lost his head. That's wrong. So we should have Mark back on the podcast.
Hello,
yeah. I think I have a pretty cool animation guest lined up for the next few weeks.
So. Yeah, but don't say anything until it's all done.
No, I have to confirm with him.
But yes. So you've got a quarter scale Joker and a quarter scale Harley now.
Yes.
Who can live up in the attic indefinitely.
In storage, because we have no room to display them down.
Because they're
here.
Huge.
You can display them on my shelf.
Yeah. Well, okay. We can put them on the piano, I guess. Well,
No, we can't.
Why?
There's a Dr. Teeth there.
Because there's a Dr. Teeth there.
Yeah. This is the only reason we have a piano. I needed some place to put the bust of Dr. Teeth.
It's true. That's true.
Where else are we going to put a bust of Dr.
Where are we going to put Dr. Teeth? Let's buy a piano.
That's exactly what happened. Wow. Actually, the way it went was, my God, we've been married for X number of years. 4, I think.
Yeah.
And he said,
that's piano anniversary.
Well, that's what he said. You know, we should
or Muppet.
We should get something fun.
Let's see. It's paper, leather, Muppet. China.
I don't want the country of China. It's a mess.
No.
But, you know, he said, we should do something nice. And I said, let's get a piano. And he goes, that'd be great because then I'd have somewhere to put Dr. Teeth. And I said, okay, the decision has been made.
Yeah.
Well, it's just like the other day I told him I was going to be Waylon Jennings for Halloween. And he goes, that is perfect because I'm going to be one of those diner napkin dispensers, but one of my sides is going to be empty.
Yeah.
And I said, how do those things go together? And he goes, well, mine is just as random as Waylon Jennings. And I was like, okay.
It's a random Halloween, you know?
That's true.
So it's just the
it's
way.
Like, Waylon Jennings, why?
Well, you're going to give the opening of Dukes of Hazzard.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, them Duke boys are at it again.
Yeah. Well, there's a passel of trouble down in Hazzard County.
Totally.
It's made old Uncle Jesse as jumpy as a cat and room full of rocking chairs. It's like, somebody Elka Bong Waylon, will he? Will ya? He's gone off again. Just pick up the guitar, hit him in the face. And it's like Waylon Jennings, and then there was another country singer. Well, Merle Haggard. Mm-hmm. You were thinking about Merle Haggard.
Merle Haggard was my second choice, because I look a little more like Merle Haggard than Waylon Jennings.
I could go as Bob Wills, but then that would make it too much of a country theme. And then it would be like, what are we pulling here?
Yeah.
I wanted to talk a little bit.
Platypus.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, when we were getting married, we had a costume wedding. I think most of you probably know this, but he comes up to me and we were trying to decide what we were going to be. And I said, you know, everyone's like, oh, are you going to match? Are you going to coordinate? Because it is your wedding. And I was like, probably not. Because we never do.
And we're both creative.
But
on our own.
He went through, as he always does every year, and I think we're on costume 3 now.
Well, yeah, we haven't decided yet.
Elephant Head, Panther, Arkham Asylum inmate. You've gone through several of. But anyway,
yeah,
you know, we have this massive costume collection because we amass them as we're changing our minds throughout September and October of what we're going to be.
And we fool ourselves into saying, well, Misty can use that in her routines, you know.
Not anymore.
Or one of her assistants could come out wearing that costume.
Sure.
And then you come out in like a black gown and do, you know, with nothing, you know.
Uh-huh.
Then do.
But anyway, so at our wedding, we went through this whole rigmarole. What are we going to be? What are we going to be? And finally, he says, well, I've decided. And I walked into his office, and I said, what? And he goes, well, this is what I'm coming to the wedding in. And I looked, and it's a full $800 high school mascot costume of a platypus. And I said,
going to the wedding in that.
That is perfect, because I was going to wear tennis shoes, a tracksuit, and a veil, and be the runaway bride. And he was like, okay, platypus is out. I said, platypus is out.
Although, you know, I had...
Still wants it.
No. I had after that learned about the whole furry subculture, and that is known as the sexy platypus.
Ew.
In some circles. And I was looking at it, I was going like, boy, there are sure a lot of animal costumes here, and they're really intricate and designed. And
why do they all have front flaps?
Yeah. lots of zippers in this.
And they have like ice cooling packs. In case things get a little hot in there.
Well, they are warm to wear just in general.
Yeah.
You know, that would be a great... I've always wanted to see, switching gears radically, I think a great idea for a fat farm, you know, weight loss spa, would be the gorilla suit spa, where you come to a spa and you
and
wear...
And get humiliated.
No, you wear a full body gorilla suit, you know, like some large animal.
Oh, yes.
And then you go on the treadmill. Or something like that, because as I understand, you sweat unbelievably when you're in one of those things.
Yeah, every person I knew that wore one of those suits for like Magic Mountain when they worked there said they had to have a guide walking around making sure they didn't pass out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Or get punched.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
The mascots get punched a lot because they're so soft and their big fat tummies are very inviting to fists for some reason.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, you know, and actually I've heard of the folks at DC have told me that They've granted walk around costumes to some of the Batman villains because they're very colorful, and you know, you can kind of create some distance between them and the crowd, like Wonder Woman, Batman. But they will not greenlight a Superman walk around because they're too afraid somebody will pull a gun and shoot him.
Oh,
or
yeah.
We'll start a fight with him.
Yeah, or punch him in the stomach.
Yeah, you know, hey, Superman.
Ready.
You know, it's like a normal dad goes to Magic Mountain with his kid, and I guess dad's okay every other time, but for what some reason, there are certain dads who become dick dads when they confront something like this, like, oh, I'm going to mess with Superman. Maybe they're just screwed up all the time, but...
America!
Yeah. But I've seen people lose.
My kid loves Superman. He's a hero to him. I'm going to beat him up, show him I'm his hero.
But I've seen parents
again,
lose it.
America!
Yeah. I've seen parents lose it around costume characters like at Disneyland. They become total a-holes, you know? Like, they go up and they start picking fights with the characters.
Jesus, why?
It's like, Alice in Wonderland, you ain't so tough. I could take you. I knocked down a six-year-old girl.
Sit down, Chester. Mama got a punch of princess.
Yeah, exactly.
The hell is that?
You ain't no more beautiful than me, Ariel, little mermaid. Smack, smack. You know, and gosh, you know.
That's hysterical.
People just lose. I remember the first time I went to Disneyland, the first costume character I saw was a Mad Hatter, who I thought was kind of creepy, and he was kind of like following me around and going like,
That is not okay.
No, it wasn't okay.
So, oh my God.
So,
At least it was the original Mad Hatter, not that new Tim Burton.
No, it was the big rubber-faced Mad Hatter. It had like a smaller sized person in it who could kind of like wiggle his nose and everything. And I actually remember hiding behind my Aunt Jane because the Mad Hatter was kind of peeking at me around the corner. And it's like, oh God, go away. It's bad enough I have to deal with Santa Claus once a year. You know, but this is too much.
You totally were like that when you were a little kid.
Yeah, I was.
Oh God, go away.
Go away.
You're like that now.
It's like, and then I actually was there like a year before Walt Disney died, and he was at the park, and he was signing autographs for
better
kids.
Better than that, and a year after, and he's at the park signing
autographs. Yeah, zombie Walt. But I actually went up to him.
Man, and on his frozen head.
I actually went up to him, you know, because I'm ancient. I'm, you know, I'm over 50, so this would have been my childhood. So, yeah, I know.
I want a divorce.
And I said, can I have an, you know, and kids were going up to him, and they were, you know, they were allowing him to, you know, he was signing autographs. Everybody wanted to, you know, he was giving them to the kids.
And so did you punch Walt?
No, I just went up and I said, can I said something really stupid. I said, thank you for letting me in, because I thought, you know, I didn't know. I thought he lived at Disneyland, you know. You know, I thought that was his home, you know, because I watched TV.
So did Walt punch you?
No, he didn't punch me. He goes, are you having a good time? No, I said two things. I said, are you having a good time? I said, yes. And I said, although, you know, the Mad Hatter, you may want to get rid of that guy. He's sort of horrifying kids.
You totally did not.
No, I didn't say that. But I did ask him. He signed my program, and I said, would you draw a picture of Donald Duck? And he kind of laughed, and he said, oh, well, just write to the studio, and someone will send you a picture of Donald Duck. And he said no. He said no.
One of my assistants will be glad to draw your picture of Donald Duck.
He patted you on the head and said, little plebe.
Yes. Yeah. Well, you think I still draw Donald Duck? Come on.
I
never drew Donald Duck to begin with.
Like, yeah.
You know, Donald Duck was, get him out of here. But he signed my autograph book.
But he rolled it up and hit you with it.
No, he was nice. But, Stan Berkowitz actually went the first day opening with Disneyland and has a picture of him posing with Walt, which is really
wow.
Cool. And it was nice. Like my Aunt Jane. Now it's like, where was your camera? It's like, well, wasn't there.
Yeah. Well, but, you've got that memory.
Yeah.
Well, you've met everybody. I mean, you've met George Lucas. You've worked with George Lucas and Steven Spielberg, and you have met both Walt Disney and Jim Henson. I mean, that's like a really charmed...
You met Jim Henson too?
Yeah. Oh yeah, that was great.
Did you talk about that in a podcast once?
I think I did.
I must have missed him saying he met him.
Okay, I'm going to skip ahead to another one. Another story is that years later, after I started working in animation, after Warner Brothers bought Hanna-Barbera, I would have lunch with Joe Barbera fairly often.
Uh-huh.
And one day I go to lunch with him, and I brought a copy of his autobiography for him to sign. We were at lunch, and I give him a pen, and I said, you know, kind of what I said to Walt. I said, do you feel like drawing anything?
Thanks for letting me in.
No. But I just, it became this thing with me, like, can animation creators and producers actually draw their own characters?
The answer is usually no.
And I said to Joe.
You're not anymore.
Yeah.
Joe at the time was like 93 or something. And he said.
Nursters.
Yeah. yeah, that's a story. And he said, I said, do you feel like drawing something today? He goes, yeah, okay, sure. And he opened up like there, like the opening of the book, there was like two blank pages, and he drew a flawless, huge image of Tom and Jerry.
Wow.
Absolutely gorgeous. And it's Tom leaning down, going like, with his lip curled up under like that, yeah. and Jerry kind of waving up at him. And I'm going like, whoa, just beautiful. And I wasn't sure what he'd draw, like maybe draw, I don't know, Fred Flintstone or Yogi Bear or something. But, you know, he drew every one of those Tom and Jerry cartoons, the storyboard for every one of those.
Oh,
so
wow.
he could draw Tom and Jerry by muscle memory. I'm not sure about Huckleberry Hound, but he could draw flawless. Like, and it's like, take that, Walt Disney. You had, you know.
Yeah.
And when I finally wrote to the Disney studio, they sent me back a photograph, you know, from TV of Donald Duck, you know.
Nice.
The publicity shot. You
well,
know?
I didn't know Joe drew in the front of that book. I should bring it in from the outhouse then.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm kidding.
It's in storage somewhere, but it's like...
We should find it.
Yeah, I mean, as well into his 90s, he could draw Tom and
that
Jerry.
That is so
and,
cool.
Yeah. yeah.
I like and admire Joe Barbera for so many reasons we can't say on this podcast.
Someday we will, but...
No, I don't think we ever should.
But maybe,
he's just
perhaps not.
Great.
He's a great guy.
He is fabulous.
Yeah, okay. Well, there's a story there. I wanted to talk a little about some movie stuff that you know that we.
I'll tell you, I don't want to talk about Contagion.
No.
That was dull.
That was dull.
I'm sorry to hear. So lame.
When the movie is the first thing you see in the movie is Gwyneth Paltrow.
You're assigned to see that for class, aren't you, Emily? No.
Oh, it's so boring. You
Gwyneth
know what?
Paltrow
funny.
Is everywhere.
That's what I was just going to say. He has been on and on and on about Gwyneth Paltrow's everywhere. Gwyneth Paltrow would show up at any opening, anything that's opening. If a can of tuna was opening, Gwyneth Paltrow would show up. And in this movie, they cut open her scalp and they lift it. And he leans over and he goes, I told you.
They open anything, even her brain. And there she is.
I mean, it was just like... God.
And I like Gwyneth Paltrow.
I mean, that's how boring the movie was.
I mean, I like her. I think she's a fine actress and everything.
Yeah.
But I guess since around May, I just noticed she is everywhere. She's on every episode of Glee. She's on the cover of Bon Appetit magazine. She's just like
she's
it or not.
She's got a good publicist.
Yeah, maybe she's running for president next year.
No, that's Angelina Jolie.
Oh, okay. Oh, also in movies, we got a report back about Comic-Con.
Oh, the comic book movie.
Oh, yeah.
Morgan Spurlock.
Yeah, Morgan Spurlock and Harry Knowles.
Yes. The combined awesomeness of Morgan Spurlock, Harry Knowles, Joss Whedon, Stan Lee, and about seven other guys I'm forgetting.
You would totally think the universe would explode when those guys all had a meeting, you know?
Oh, and Guillermo del Toro. He's in there somewhere.
Oh, come on.
Yeah, he's in there somewhere.
Oh, it just gets better and better.
Again, Guillermo, he's like Gwyneth. He's everywhere.
Harry wants you to friend him on Facebook.
Oh, I will. I'll do that tonight.
Click that confirm button.
He's one of my best friends.
I walked into Paul's office and I go, hey, I said, click on that little button with the two guys on your Facebook. And I said, you have 1,002 friend requests. And I said, dude, get on that. I said, would
you just
please
doesn't confirm anyone.
Just scroll down the
I don't know how it works.
And see if you know anybody, because there are so many people. Like, I saw my cousins on the list. I'm seeing, like, you know, like, and I'm getting these, like, little, I can't believe Paul won't friend me on Facebook, Harry, these on my wall. And I said, you know, this is the second time ever Harry Knowles has posted to my wall, and both of them have been about you.
I hate to bring this up, Emily, but Emily did the same thing. How come he doesn't befriend me? Does he not remember my last name? And then just recently.
I'm like the Wizard of Oz.
That's right, because I saw you. He just did it last night. It was just last night he clicked on your name because I was standing over his shoulder, and I said, just start clicking. And he did, and so he got down to about, like, what, 40?
Yeah.
He got about through 40 of them, and he goes, I'm going to have Tyler do this.
No, it's like...
There's like 1,000 of them, and you know how long it takes for, like, all your mutual friends to load, like,
somebody
every
else
single person?
Friend request everyone.
I'm not that good on the computer. I'm like the Wizard of Oz, you know? It's like I seem to be all-powerful, but it's like, come back. No, I can't. I don't know how it works. Friend me on Facebook. I can't. I don't know how it works.
That's true.
I do not know how it works, and I do... I know a little bit. But
I've been trying to link his Twitter to his Facebook. He's like, don't do that. It'll all blow up. And I'm like, it really won't. And he's like, oh, I don't know. This is just too much. It's too much.
I just got down smoke signals 10 years ago.
One of the first times I was here, I helped set his PVR.
Dude still has an AOL email address. Thank you.
Oh, all right. Yes. Okay.
Maybe it'll come back in vogue.
Yeah. Someday AOL will come back.
Yeah.
I mean, you like think AOL has like this little bird that taps your messages out going, ah, it's a
delivering.
Yeah, that's it. It's purely from Flintstones. Yeah.
You gotta tug on an elephant schnoz to download. Yeah. It's just terrible. It's like Flintstones crap, and it takes forever. I'm surprised it isn't stuck in dial-up.
What?
What?
Oh, yeah. I want to get online now. Oh, you can't. The pig that eats the garbage is online now. I guess I'll go throw the cat out of the house again. You can't. He's waiting to get online.
Jeremy the hamster stopped running in his wheel and we lost our connection.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Okay. Now can I get online? No. Dino's on Twitter. That was Joe Barbera's nickname for me, was Dino. Like, he'd see me in the hallways and go, Dino, how's it going? And I'm not sure if that was like a fond thing because we're both Italian and he liked shortening my name to that. Mm-hmm. Or if that he was hallucinating and I looked like a purple dinosaur. Either way, I would have taken it.
You know what? They're both good options. I love that your grandpa Dina used to call you Piccioletto.
Piccioletto, yeah.
Do you know what Piccioletto means in Italian?
No.
That means pee in bed.
Little pisser.
Little pisser. Little pisser. Little bedwetter. So go like, Piccioletto. You come over and smack me on the head.
Wow.
Piccioletto. Oh, Piccioletto.
I got to remember
And
that.
I was working for him at his restaurant. And I was tending bar, you know, and I'd be trying to talk to some customers,
yeah, you
know.
Say that with me sitting here.
Yeah, and it'd be like, you know,
if he's yelling Piccioletto,
Grandpa, I'm trying to be a cool bartender. You go Piccioletto, Lazzaroni. He's a lazy bum. That's the other one, Lazzaroni. He would whack me on the side of the head, Lazzaroni. He would cut it into syllables, so Lazzaroni. I guess that was like.
And this is why we're all in therapy.
But there's a charmed old Italian man. They're very charming. My grandpa's charming. My dad is charming.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I'm an old Italian man. Am I charming? Or
I want
just
a divorce.
Oh, thanks.
It's the second time. I'm kidding. It's the second time you called yourself old.
I'm not old.
I refuse to be married to an old man. I'm not interested.
Okay.
So don't be old.
I'm not old.
No, I don't think you're old.
No, it's charming in a Marcello Mastroianni.
Do I think that you are a charming Italian man? Absolutely.
Okay,
have
right.
you got that swagger and that debonair charm? Yes, you do.
Me sure.
What was that mean?
Me sure. What? That's Italian. It says, you sure? Yeah.
That's not.
Me sure. Yeah.
That sounds like you spat.
I'm trying to be charming in Italian.
You're trying too hard.
Some Italians just aren't charming.
An old Italian man is a guy who's gone back to wearing all black and his hands look like spiders and he's like, you know. And he talks like,
that's Marlon Brando was an old Italian man.
Yeah, it's like old Italian men, they talk like this.
He shoves oranges in his mouth.
Yeah, all the old Italian men that I have seen at like the little Pinocchios and stuff all wear tracksuits.
Well, all right, last Christmas.
They do.
Last Christmas I was in Pinocchios and I saw, it was Christmas Eve and there was this older Italian gentleman, glorious to behold, because he was wearing like a hunting jacket and a Tyrolean hat.
Yeah, he was.
And he had his son there, and I thought about, you know, my dad and my grandpa and all that and Christmas and all that stuff. It was a good kind of warm feeling and everything. But then you get the really old Italian men who know a lot of weird old secrets and know about life and everything, and they're charming too, but you know, I got a long ways to go before I hit that. My dad has a long way to go.
When do they pull you aside and tell you all the weird old secrets? Because I want to hear them.
You have to gain them through life experience.
That sucks.
No, because then you get to be about 110, and then you know all the old life experience.
By the time you're 110, you're crazy and demented, and you're making up weird old secrets.
That's the secret.
Oh,
they're all
you
made up.
You define your reality by making up weird stories. And that's a secret I kind of learned about, some years back. So.
Yeah, you make a living doing it.
Yeah.
So I guess you really are a weird old Italian man.
Well, I'm Italian. I'm a weird Italian man.
Does that mean I get to swear at you and throw spoons from the kitchen?
No, because then you'd have to wear black all the time.
I do.
And you're but unattractive black. You'd have to wear like
frumpy black?
Yeah, and then a hairnet and, you know.
Oh, I'm on it.
And comes out and say, hey, mangiana.
Mm-hmm.
Mangiana.
Yeah.
Which means eat.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't make any sense.
I just want to hit people with a wooden spoon.
Oh,
that's
well,
real.
You don't have to be Italian to be that. You know, you just, I mean, Rashi does that all the time.
Oh, yeah.
He's out, you know, laying into people with a
wooden spoon. I'll tell you what I can't do with a spoon.
What's that?
Fix Homer's hair.
Oh, poor creature.
Oh, my God.
God.
It's terrible.
Oh, speaking of weird things and weird things in black, I saw, and this also ties into movies, I saw the first photographs of Barnabas Collins, or Johnny Depp is
and?
Oh.
Not good?
Well, you know what? Johnny Depp can look very attractive in the kind of like the thin kind of swarthy, you know, or thin kind of, how would you call it? Like
Ichabod Crane kind of way?
Yeah, hipster type way. Like in The Tourist, you know, I can see how girls would think he's real attractive. And even Jack Sparrow, girls love him as that. And then I remember this is a Tim Burton movie. And he looks...
Does he look like Tim Burton?
No, he looks like Willy Wonka again.
Although, really?
Oh, no.
He looks like the
Shadows
Joker. This
guy isn't supposed to be... Willy Wonka looking. He's to be creepy and
no, Barnabas sleek. Collins always looks very distinguished. Yeah. I mean, well, you know, if you
he
go by...
He looks like an evil Doctor Who.
Well, yeah, he looked... Jonathan Frid, who played him originally, had this sort of aristocratic look to him. And, you know, he wore the kind of like the Inverness cape, you know, and everything. But he always had this sort of regal bearing. And the shot I saw today, and again, it might be a location shot, and he might be covered up for a reason, has him doing kind of more of the... Francis Coppola Dracula thing, you know, when Dracula was out in sunlight and everything.
Yeah.
So he looks like the Joker. Aww. You know, he's wearing a slouch hat like the Joker. His skin is as white as the Joker. His hair looks plastered down. He's wearing big, huge glasses. He does have the cape and he's got the Barnabas Collins cane from what I could see. But he really looks kind of Wonka, Michael Jackson-y, you know, like so.
Yeah.
I don't know, but he's walking around in daytime, so he might be covered up, you know, because he is a vampire and everything. So maybe when he's running around Collinwood, maybe he's a little bit more of the you know the.
Yeah, I just pulled a picture. That's very white makeup.
Isn't that
very white makeup?
Yeah, I understand, you know, the undead and all that, but you know, I always thought, you know, Johnny Depp as Barnabas Collins, you know, I think of him as sort of like. You know, kind of handsome, like the way, but a little bit offbeat, like the way Robert Downey Jr. plays Sherlock Holmes, something like that.
Yeah, rugged.
Yeah, and you like the way he came off in Alice in Wonderland playing the Mad Hatter.
Yeah, I liked that one scene where they're stepping into battle because he had such a look of steel on his face. And like I said, I never, and from everything I understand, and everyone we know who knows him has told me, is that he is just this wonderful, amazing, kind, gentle soul of a human being. He is such an awesome guy.
Yeah.
But I never really liked his work. And it feels crappy for me to say because he has such a tremendous body of work. And I haven't seen everything he's done. But I never liked his work until I saw that moment. Because I never thought he had the pathos in him to pull that off. And I said, wow, there's a lot more to him than I ever knew.
Yeah.
And it was just like, it was just one of those things where as an actor to an actor, I went... Nice, dude.
Yeah.
And I all of a sudden, boom, I turned into somebody that respected him. And then I started viewing his work with a different, with a more unbiased attitude. And then I really started appreciating his work quite a lot.
Yeah.
So I liked that one scene in Alice in Wonderland a hell of a lot, yes.
Right, right. And I'm really looking forward to The Rum Diary because I like that book a lot.
Yeah, that looks amazing.
And, you were just looking for, did you find that book today? You were looking for it.
No, I think I may have left it somewhere. It may have been carried over into storage.
Oh.
But Ed Wood is probably one of my favorite.
That is an amazing movie, too.
I showed you that, right? We watched that, right?
I have never seen it all the way through.
Okay.
You keep saying you're going to show it to me. We keep putting it in the DVD
and we keep
player.
Looking for it, and it's just vanishing.
Yeah.
That is one of, you know, because he is so terrific in that as this sort of like he's like an optimistic,
this
warped,
beautiful,
puppy.
Childlike, sense of wonder about just everything. I love that movie.
I love everything about that movie, from the pie plates that they use as the flying saucers to everything in that movie. I just watch that movie and I get so happy. It's like
Well, there's a scene in there that you just absolutely think is hysterical.
Oh, yeah, and it's not even in the movie. It's in the bonus footage.
Oh, really?
But it's like a scene they shot and they cut out because it was even too weird for Tim Burton to put in the movie, but not weird. But it wasn't weird enough for him not to film, you know?
Yeah.
And it's this great scene of mariachis going through a slaughterhouse, and there are all these hanging sides of beef, and they're... And Bill Murray is leading them, and he's singing Que Sera Sera. And he's dressed as this weird pre-transvestite, and he's singing Que Sera Sera. And the mariachis are accompanying him through sides of beef. And as a piece of art, it's just phenomenal looking.
Yeah.
But in the middle of a movie where you're asking kind of a lot for the mainstream audience to sit through a story of an unsuccessful filmmaker... I can understand why it got cut. It was just a little too much, but it's still a terrific thing. Bill Murray does this great thing in another scene. He's great throughout the whole movie, but there's this one moment that makes me laugh every time I see it. And that's, in order to get his movie financed, Ed Wood plays up to a group of Hollywood bankers who are, they're like Baptists or something. They all have to get baptized in order to get
Bill Murray and all in the pool.
Yeah, and then the pool. So Ed goes down, he gets baptized, and you've got Tor Johnson and Vampire awaiting their turns. And Bill Murray steps up to the pool, and he's fully dressed, and he's wearing shoes. But right before he gets in the pool, he puts like one, the toe of one shoe in as if to test the water, and then he goes in. And it's like, that to me is always funny. He's like, he's wearing shoes. What does he care if it's gold or not? But it's just a brilliant little touch.
And
that movie is filled with little touches. And I remember going to see that movie the first night it opened and being so excited for it. And thinking, oh man, this is the best movie ever made. And then about a week later, I heard, what, it's not making any money? What, are people nuts?
I couldn't believe it. It was just so well done.
Well, I think Tim Burton was a little too new for mainstream audiences. And I think if they had released a movie now, it would have done better business.
Because, I mean, Big Fish must have done better business than Ed Wood.
Yeah, but I think everybody caught up with it later. It's one of those movies that you talk to film fans about, and they all know it. They all can quote scenes from it. They all think it's brilliant. And it really is terrific. Just as great, with Johnny Depp fans and Tim Burton fans, and also has a nice vocal cameo by our good friend Maurice LaMarche.
Indeed, it does.
The voice of Orson Welles in that picture.
Oh, Maurice LaMarche.
Congratulations,
Emmy
Tim
winner.
Welles. Emmy winning.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Congratulations to Bob Bergen, also, who was Emmy nominated.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But Vincent D'Onofrio plays Orson Welles, sitting at the very same booth that we would always sit at.
So they Maurice voiceovered Vincent D'Onofrio's Orson Welles. I didn't even realize that when I just assumed it was Vincent.
I think he did it, and I think that Tim said, "Can we find a closer voice match?" And and they used,
because he looked good.
He looked great.
Yeah,
he looked great. That's interesting. But, a lot of people have done recent versions of Welles. Like they've done plays about Welles, and they've done we saw that play about
Rhinoceros.
Welles putting on the play. Yeah,
rhinoceros.
And now that there's a play about him putting on Moby Dick or something.
A play about Welles putting on rhinoceros.
Yeah.
The Ionesco play?
Yeah.
That's got to be amazing.
It was
interesting, for sure. It was actually really good. I don't remember much about it. I just enjoyed it.
It was great.
That sounds fascinating to me.
Yeah.
It was, let's see.
I don't know who was in it.
I do. It was, not Daniel Day. It was,
John Larroquette.
Ooh. John Larroquette? Was he in it? No, that was It's a Wonderful Life.
Oh, I don't know anything.
Which we saw at the Pasadena Playhouse.
That's right. Mm. Well, we saw both of them at the Pasadena Playhouse. Yeah. Or was that one at the Geffen?
No. They were both at the Pasadena Playhouse.
Okay.
Yeah, but there was some great acting.
Mustn't have been recently.
Yeah. No, it was a couple why? Did they close it down?
They're always on the border of not doing too much there. Everybody I knew that used to work there doesn't work there anymore. It's down to, just this limited crew and...
At the Pasadena Playhouse? Yeah. Alan Burnett had a subscription over there. Mm-hmm. And
It's a great theater. I worked there for a few years, yeah.
Yeah, but I guess they just can't keep it open. You know, they can't, or either that or they just have to, slash ticket prices to $5 each and then put on, popular entertainments or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what it is. Maybe the country's getting stupider. Well, either that or people just don't have money to go to plays anymore.
And people never had money to go to plays. That's why I'm doing this.
Well, I went to see it wasn't a play, but last week in London, again, I went to see the Batman live show.
Oh, yeah.
And that was...
The Harley Quinn show.
The Harley Quinn show. Hey, it's great. Harley Quinn. And that's written by our friends Alan Burnett and Stan Berkowitz. And
Who got to go to Disneyland on the first day ever. Who we should have on this podcast.
Yes, yeah.
We should have Stan and Tegan together on.
Yeah.
Stan and his wife. What a hell of a couple they are. Did you guys meet them on the 4th of July?
No,
they are so.
Did we meet Stan?
Awesome.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah. They're awesome. I bet you did. They're amazing. Both of them. They're so excellent.
So I went to see the Batman live show, and it was to get in. It was like £39, which in U.S. dollars is about $780 at the moment.
Exactly.
And it was good, except about halfway through Act Two, the Batmobile broke down. And Batmobile lost its wheel. The Joker got away.
Literally. No, that's too bad.
Literally, I left singing that song, and I left because I didn't want to wait for it to come back up. I waited 10 minutes, and then suddenly I felt like I was at Spider-Man the Musical, you know, like, we'll get things rolling again in a little bit.
They didn't just leave it on stage. They actually stopped it to try to deal with it.
They turned the lights down and, you know, and they said, well, we'll be starting up again in a moment. And I guess what happened was I got a tweet from somebody who had actually been at the same performance and said they did start up and they repeated a scene in order to, you know, get the show started again. And
did they see you there? Did you see that person?
No, I just said in my tweets, I saw this and the Batmobile broke down in the middle of Act Two. And so they said, oh, yeah, we were at that show, and they got it started
again. What a fun coincidence.
Yeah.
But I forget sometimes you have, like, 10,000 Twitter followers.
And there were a ton of people.
You know, and I'm
there,
just like,
there were a lot of people at that. That was a big stadium, and it wasn't totally sold out, but there were a lot of folks there for
that's
that.
That's cool.
That was the final show of it in London. It's touring other parts of England now.
And it's coming here next year.
Yep. But anyway, I had Mom and I had an early table at Viraswamy, so I wanted to be on time for a reservation, so I left, and I waited 10 minutes.
You had also just arrived in London.
I was pretty jet-lagged, too.
Yeah.
And if it was any longer, I would have fallen asleep. So I walked outside, and I left. And even by leaving the auditorium, it was still, like, a long time, you know. And I never heard anything like it was starting up again, because usually when a show starts up again, somebody cheers, or you hear the music come back on the loudspeaker. Mm-hmm. So I'd seen the finale of it on YouTube, so I kind of knew how it came out. Batman wins. Spoiler. We got a few tweets. You want to...
Yeah, we got to run through them really, really fast, though, because we're way over time.
All right, let's do some...
Questions from the fans.
Okay, let's do.
Hurry!
Okay, this is from Aaron Fever. Says, here's a question for the cast. If Marvel handed you the X-Men franchise to play with, who would be on your team if you could choose the X-Men? Do you know who the X-Men are?
Yeah, I know who the X-Men are. If I could only choose two, I would want Professor and Wolverine.
Yeah. I would only want Wolverine. He's the only one you need. He's just too badass to do.
I'd choose Wolverine Colossus so I can get a fastball special.
Oh, yeah. That's good. I mean, yeah. They would throw each other around.
Jean Grey could be helpful because she never dies.
No, she always dies.
Yeah, I don't know. Exactly. She's still dead now.
Is she dead at the moment? I don't know. Oh, no. Good news. You can use Jean. She just died again.
That's like Deuce with his SS Peeners sinking his ships all the time.
She's been dead since Grant's last attack.
I don't know.
Grant?
Yeah, Grant Morrison.
He's writing for Marvel?
Yeah, he wrote X-Men like 7-10 years ago, and she's been dead since.
She's been dead since then?
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay.
All right, well, then I guess I don't want Jean Grey.
Emily, who would you have on your team?
I know Wolverine.
Yeah. I know. That's like, I'll tell you who I wouldn't want is the card-throwing guy, Gambit.
Oh, yeah.
What?
Worthless. What do you do with that?
He's just annoying.
You know, I thought he was cool when I was younger.
Yeah, when you're five. It's like, oh, it's cool to throw cards, and you go, wait, I can do that.
Yeah. They just don't blow up.
Yeah.
Well, no, but you could put those little firework popper things.
Oh,
and
yeah.
All of a sudden, you're just like Gambit.
Firecracker on
the Actually, I saw the new X-Men movie on the plane. I hadn't seen it before. We missed that one.
Yeah, you said it was great.
Yeah,
guess what?
Yeah, keep moving. Things.
What else?
Wolverine has a great cameo. In it.
Okay, right. Next twist. Okay. Next question.
Let's see. Next question. Last night I dreamed I was... this comes from Biscuit Zombie, who writes, last night I dreamed I was Harley... and my parents were proud of me. Does this mean I should turn to a life of crime?
Yes. Next question.
Yes. Also, I have a background in psychology, and I'm blonde. Oh, God, I really need to think about this. Crime is a good way of going. Now, you know,
it's
the only thing that's got any longevity to it. Look at these Somali pirates.
You answered the question. Move on.
Somali pirates are making a fortune these days.
Okay. Question.
Okay. Tebow of Gotham writes, who would you like to see play Zatanna in a live-action feature? I married her, so...
Oh, that was nice of you.
Yes.
Next question.
Happy Sorceress says, who will...
That's not me, because I'm the Naughty Sorceress. Naughty Sorceress on Kingdom of Loathing. Actually, I am Mystic Roni and Cheese, because I'm a pasta mancer.
Yes.
That's not a question. I'm sorry. Moving on.
Keep moving.
Will you be still doing the Dina book with Joe Quinones? Yes, it's in the works. It's coming out.
It's a graphic novel, so it's going to take a little while.
Yeah, I've seen about a quarter of the artwork. It's terrific.
It's
Cole Rothaker, our girlfriend, writes, I'd like to hear any final thoughts you got regarding Batman Brave and the Bold now that it's ended. I thought it was a terrific show. It was a lot of fun. And the last episode was really terrific.
And it made you cry.
The last scene made me cry.
Oh. Next.
So, let's see. Carolyn Belefsky writes,
Advice for someone pursuing the creation of webcomics. Just do them.
Every day. You've got to generate new content as much as possible to run people to your site.
Yeah.
And you've got to be consistent. And if you can link product to it, even better.
Yeah. So if you've got any way of putting comics up on the website, by all means, do it. And also, do you read webcomics? If so, which ones do you read? Not any ones on Dinosaur Comics.
That's what I was going to say.
Dinosaur Comics is so awesome.
Quants.com.
I'm a big fan of Blue Milk, which is the Star Wars comic that they do, like parodying the run.
And we also have to mention Toopy Doops, who's Kevin McShane's.
Oh, yeah.
We got to mention that. I went to the Natural History Museum, and they were selling that big, fat, fuzzy dinosaur from Dinosaur Comics in the Natural History Museum, and I was like, when worlds collide! Wow.
Was it actually the same one that he used?
It's the dinosaur from Dinosaur Comics. I was so happy to see it in the Natural History Museum at the dinosaur exhibit.
Excellent.
How ridiculous. So I don't know if it snuck in or if they were actually selling it, but I was thrilled to see it there.
Actually, I'll probably be coming out with some Jingle Bells stuff for this Christmas online. And I'm actually developing a Mutant Texas kind of weird spinoff for online that'll be a weekly comic.
Next question.
Titty T says...
Wait, who?
Titty T.
Okay. It's a family show.
Yes. Have you seen Batman Arkham City in action? Yes. And do you think it's a bomb, a.k.a. the good, a.k.a. awesome? All those things, yes. Dalo R. says, how enjoyable has it been working on the Arkham Asylum games? Insanely enjoyable. And Chaos in a Box
says, I love that.
What do you like on your pizza? Have we answered that question before?
That's gross. Tell them so that they can all leave you teeth to your on shame.
Pizza. Okay. All right, let's go around. What do you like on your pizza?
Pepperoni and mushrooms. Yeah, I think we did do this.
Yeah, well, we'll do it again quickly.
Yeah, pepperoni and mushrooms.
I forgot.
You forgot.
What do you like on your pizza?
You got your pesto.
Pesto?
Yeah.
It?
Yeah, pesto
I
chicken.
I like pepperoni and green peppers. Now, Grossy, answer us.
Anchovies, jalapeno, and pineapple.
Oh, pineapple, that's right.
So
you did say that. Yeah.
Gross. I just like extra cheese.
Rashi, what do you like on yours? Good.
I like mine alone.
Okay.
I don't even want to smell yours when it's around. No, I like spaghetti on my pizza.
Well, that actually is pretty good.
Yeah, Dino's.
Yeah.
And Hobart, who's not here, he likes wallaby on his pizza, but hold the pizza.
Hobart likes a haircut on his pizza.
And I got Scott Klinger here mentioning that still waiting patiently for a Jonathan Pendragon appearance on this show.
Ooh, yeah, we got to get him in here.
Okay.
I've been remiss on even getting a hold of the guy. He's been traveling back and forth from Sweden.
Has he?
Yeah, he's been everywhere.
Wow.
Yeah, God bless him.
Good.
Busy, busy dude. So I guess we're wrapping up.
I guess we should get back to the party.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I forgot we had a bunch of people.
I'll open the door. We can hear them. Hear them in there?
Via the magic of radio.
Well, we better go join the festivities.
Hobart's wearing one of your hair extensions.
The real festivities. Hobart, I like you in a bow.
We gotta fix that poor animal. So we're going to sign off. This is Paul.
It's Misty.
And goodbye.
Bye.
This has been another episode of Radio Rashi. If you've enjoyed this episode, let everyone know by leaving a review in the iTunes Store. It's a great way to help others find us. You can also leave comments on RadioRashi.com, Facebook.com/RadioRashi, or follow us on Twitter at Radio Rashi or at Paul_Dini to leave us questions. Thanks for listening, and tell your friends.